Blog Talk Radio.
From the far reaches of the known universe, we are proud to present Brother Harold Muhammad, soldier, scientist, scholar. Blog Talk Radio's finest, not so mad science, on Black Hole Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to tonight's edition of Not So Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, coming to you live once more and again from the city of Detroit. Just because Berry Gordy took Motown to L.A. does not mean Detroit has lost its soul. Well, we have an interesting night of a lot of science to go through tonight. And you'll find that this year I'm going to lean much heavier on the sciences. So, to that end, and before we begin, let's start off with a little bit of, let's see who we can start off with before we start swinging and slinging. We're going to run that freight train down the track. Here it goes, clickety-clack. And then we're going to get right on moving. But you know what? I'm not going to be a freight train tonight. I'm going to roar like a lion. Oh, yes, oh, yes. Got a lot on my mind and a lot of things to dump off my heart. So, while we deal with the cold, we're going to let the Isley Brothers chime in with a little bit of summer breeze. And then I'm going to stick my foot in it tonight. Welcome back. A summer breeze blowing through my mind. How I wish I had that this time. What is the value and what is the importance of a man and his manhood? So at this particular moment, I'm speaking particularly to Miss Roberts Muhammad. Any man with nothing to do is a man ain't worth 2 cents of a nickel to nobody. Men have a job to do. And what is a man's job? Men are the maintainers of women and children. That is a man's job. And a man who's not willing to commit himself 100% totally to doing that job is not worth the manhood that he's been given by birth. A real man does not care so much about sex. He cares about doing his job. A real man really doesn't care a whole lot about money. He does care about doing his job. What is his job? To ensure that his children, first and foremost, are safe and secure. Secondly, his job is to make sure that the woman that he loves is safe, healthy, and secure. It ain't the good time. He really don't give a damn about that. Because if his woman is not safe and secure, if his children are not safe and secure, then he is not worth the time of day. And the sun should never rise or shine on him. He needs to find a hole somewhere, crawl in it, and bury himself and die. A man is the value of the job that he does. He is built to carry the heavy load. We are made to carry stress. And any man who has nothing on his mind is a man who has nothing to give. What is the value of a man? The value of a man is what he has in his head. And if he can't give what he has in his head, then he is of no value to the woman. Yeah, it'd be great to have a good old time all the time. But we don't live in that world. We live in a world where there's hell going on. We live in a world where people are pulling guns on people. We live in a world, if you don't shoot back, then you might as well find a crack and hide yourself in it. The world is full of stress, and somebody must deal with that. Too many men out here right now, young and old, they are cowards to their existence. All they care about is the good old times. Well, the world does not care about your good old time. What the world cares about is what do you do with the time that you have. It would be great, Robert Muhammad, if all there was to think about was having a good time. But when a man comes in after dealing with this world, the one thing he wants to do more than anything else is lay his head on his woman's chest or across her lap. And you know what he's going to do? He's going to fall asleep. Because that is the only time his mind is at peace, when he's asleep across his woman's chest or her lap. He doesn't want to think about anything else. He just wants to be at peace for the few moments that he can have peace of mind. Yeah, he would love to take his woman out. He would love to be able to have money to take her someplace. He would love to be able to do a whole lot of things. But that world died over 100 years ago. There's too much hell out there, and he has to fight it because that's his job. Being young and full of energy, well, somebody has to live and die. For all of you all that are out there full of energy, to have something to do, because you're not going to do it. So Mr. Good Time Charlie, do your thing and die and get out the way, because real men have to suffer with women who are unhappy because their man has to do your job and his. Now that's my soapbox moment for the night. Now I'm going to get to what I really want to do. I got a job to do, and my job is to deliver the science to those who do not comprehend or understand science. My job is to make it simple, thus my program. This is Not So Mad Science, with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Yes, I'm coming to you live from the city of Detroit, and I do love Johnson Roberts Muhammad. but I'll be goddamn if I'm not going to do my job in the process. So, what do I have to say about this? How is the record-breaking governmental shutdown by that nincompoop in Washington, how is he affecting the world of science? Well, let me tell you. As a partial federal government shutdown, and believe me, I'm coming off the top of my head right now because I didn't get a chance to prepare. So if I make some mistakes in my oratory, do forgive me because I got other things on my mind, but I have a job to do. As the partial federal government shutdown enters going into the fourth, now into the fifth week, on January 12th, it became the longest governmental shutdown in U.S. history. Scientists are increasingly feeling the impact. Thousands of federal workers who handle food safety, public health are furloughed. Countless projects researching everything from climate change to pest control to hurricane predictions are on hold. And guess who worries about that? Real men who understand what's out there, what's coming, worry about the impact of these things on those that they love. Because we are blessed with the unfortunate understanding of what's coming. So that everybody else can have a good time, somebody else has to prepare for what's coming. Among the government agencies hit by the partial shutdown is the U.S. Geological Survey, the Department of Agriculture, the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, the Environmental Protection Agency, NASA, where nearly all employees are on leave. Additionally, over 40% of the Food and Drug Administration's 14,000 workers are furloughed, as are most employees of the National Park Services and the Fish and Wildlife Service. Meanwhile, the National Science Foundation, responsible for doling out nearly $8 billion in research funds each year, has stopped awarding grants and has canceled review panels with outside scientists that are part of the process. Did you not know that in 2018, the National Science Foundation gave out $42 million in grants? From January 1st through January 8th last year alone. But this year, nothing has been funded so far. Benjamin Korb, a guy I know, of the American Society for Biochemistry and Molecular Biology, noted in a statement January 8th, he said, such stalled funding is leading to a backlog that could slow down approvals long beyond the shutdown. Here are some of the consequences of delaying government research and how some scientists are trying to cope. Everybody likes to wake up in the morning. You want to hear the weather. You want to know what the temperature is outside. Well, your meteorologist on your local news station better be a very good meteorologist because there's no backup data for them to get. And why is that so? Because the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is shut down. They can't help you. In public safety, both the National Institute of Health and the Center for Disease Control and Prevention remain funded and operational. Flu surveillance is still being funded through the CDC. Medicare and Medicaid programs are also safe. But other agencies working to protect public health have scaled back operations. The Indian Health Services which funds care for Native Americans, is in limbo. Health clinic employees are working without pay, while some grants and programs are on hold. The USDA is still inspecting meat, dairy, and poultry products, but routine FDA inspections of produce are suspended. But we seem to be experiencing a bit of a technical issue here, dear family and friends. So we're going to take a brief switch over to some music while we straighten out some of these technical issues. Welcome back, welcome back. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. I seem to have got the technical error corrected, so we're going to try to get right back to where we left off and hopefully have things in order. So just bear with me a quick moment while we do what we do, and we can get back to the scientific news at hand. Where did we go? Where did we go? Ah, here we go. The FDA has suspended routine inspections of produce, which is now increasing the possibility of foodborne illnesses outbreak. Given that worry, the agency hopes to resume inspections of high-risk facilities prone to outbreaks. However, the FDA has been overloaded and making errors before this. They were already overworked, and they were already underfunded. Now, with the governmental shutdown, you have scientists who are no longer working. You have something less than a skeleton staff on hand to test food products. How are they to keep up with or at least maintain the status quo with testing the food products that are being distributed around the country? So look for a huge spike in salmonella. Look for a huge spike in other foodborne diseases that are going to cause people across the entire country to become sick. Crops are already having major difficulties because the farmers have not received their funding for produce already produced and for new crops that are supposed to come out. Farmers were already in a struggle. And then you have companies like Monsanto distributing a carcinogenic pesticides, and now we have these issues. So what is the federal government to do? Continue the status process of a governmental shutdown? Continue to put the American people at severe and major risk? Can we afford to stay in this type of unsecure and unsafe environment? Are those who have been pledged to safeguard the American way of life truly looking out for our benefit? I would think not. Weather forecasts have become extremely less accurate because the National Weather Service's key prediction tools are not working correctly and there's no one around to fix it. It was reported in the Washington Post, citing Sarul Sahar of the National Weather Service, who was speaking about the Environmental Modeling Center in College Park, Maryland. We have major problems before us because of this governmental shutdown. Meanwhile, work to improve hurricane models by adding the latest data in physics and the other associated sciences has come to a complete stop, according to forecaster Eric Blake of the National Weather Service. EPA employees who police industry compliances with laws restricting air and water pollution are on leave, and work to clean up Superfund site areas of extreme environmental contamination is suspended. That means any research into the potential health or environmental effects of new contaminants is on hold. National parks are also in disarray, with few to no rangers to control crowds or enforce sanitation rules or regulations against environmental damage. Visitors wanting to drive off-road through the California desert cut down protected Joshua trees to clear a path in Joshua Tree National Park. Park Superintendent David Smith told the National Park Traveler, "It can take years for desert soils and slow-growing Joshua trees to recover from such damage." Scientists are just not able to gather data from government websites that are not being updated or are completely offline. That hurt climate scientist Angeline Pendergrass's work building computer models at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado, who predicts how climate change will impact rainfall patterns. Pendergrass normally verifies her calculations against prediction records housed in the Global Historical Climatology Network, which logs global temperature and rainfall measurements. But while those data are still being collected automatically, the data aren't available for usage, as usual, through NOAA. Pendergrass's project was stalled for days until she found a workaround to access the data in a different way. She says, quote, "I worry a lot about missing observations from monitoring equipment malfunctions, which could mess up her research. And her concerns are well-founded. About 10% of contributing U.S. weather stations appear to be offline. Lead scientist Robert Rode at Berkeley Earth, to be specific, an independent group for scientific analysis based in Berkeley, California, tweeted, "Everything is not working. We can neither validate the accuracy or the inaccuracy of the data." Animals in the USDA facilities are still being cared for, but scientists can't collect data or do experiments. Interruptions in animal research involving steps being taken at certain times, like cows that need to be bred at a certain age, can set researchers back months or even years. During this shutdown, federal scientists can't attend scientific meetings. Important arenas for sharing new research. Already, government scientists have missed key conferences on astronomy, biology, weather, agricultural science, and social sciences. More than 10% of planned participants at the American Astronomical Society meeting that just wrapped up on January 10th in Seattle had to cancel presentations. The AAS spokesman Rich Feinberg says some were able to ask co-authors to take their place. Astrophysicist Jane Rigby at NASA's Goddard Flight Center was not one of them. Rigby had to abandon her planned talks about the James Webb Space Telescope because nobody outside of the U.S. Space Agency had the expertise to cover for her. That is the Super Bowl for astronomy, and government scientists were not allowed to play. It's not even like they were put on the bench. They weren't even allowed in the stadium. Hundreds of USDA employees have also pulled out of the San Diego meeting at the International Plant and Animal Genome that started on January 12th. Because future research priorities are decided at these conferences, the cancellations will have implications for the whole year's research. Do you think that Colt 45 took the impact of his decision into consideration of what the real impact is over the next 2 years of his administration? One of Dr. Van Eneman's graduate students relies on a USDA computer server to run a simulation program for research that's needed to complete her degree. She isn't allowed to access it right now. So the planned updates to make the program more suitable to the projects needed are also not happening. So she's stuck, and she's the one who updates the information. Some scientists can ride out any funding delays. But for those working on projects that are time sensitive, the halt in funding approvals threatens to throw off an entire year or years of work. Physiologist Hannah Carey is still waiting for this year's money to come in for her research at the University of Wisconsin-Madison on ground squirrel hibernation. Doesn't seem to be very important, does it? However, hibernating animals endure extreme changes in body temperature and heart rate. Studying how they cope could help scientists understand how human bodies deal with trauma or extreme conditions. This year's funds for the project, almost $250,000, were supposed to arrive in January of this year. But amid the shutdown, Carey has had to pull from a university fund that helped researchers bridge funding gaps to pay her postdoctoral researcher, seed and house the squirrels, and buy chemicals to analyze her samples. So to ensure that that research goes on, they had to take money away from the other students' important work as well. So she says, we're okay for the time being, but the stopgap money from the university isn't an infinite well, and she doesn't know how long it will last. Delaying the project is not an option, though. The research requires monitoring brief periods of arousal during the squirrel's natural hibernation cycle. And the winter is when the squirrel is in her labs are asleep. Regardless of the government, the squirrels carry on. So what is important? Timing is everything. Decisions cannot be arbitrarily made to satisfy the ego of one to the disproportionate difficulty of another. I'm reminded of a phrase that a once former slave used to say to his master. Master gets sick and he say, we sick, master, when there's nothing wrong with the slave. But because master is ill, there is no production on the farm. Everything is shut down because master don't feel good. Well, this is not a master-slave kind of relationship. This relationship is a relationship where the people, government for the people, by the people. Well, apparently, this is not government for the people, because the damn sure is not by the people. It is to satisfy the ego of one man, one bratty child. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. To that end, we're going to keep moving along. We're going to keep trucking along, because our next piece of news from the world of science, and I think this is going to be something of interest to everyone, because its effect is felt by everyone all around the planet. And I want you all to remember, as we have been saying now, going on 7 months now, in the words of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, watch the weather. Why? Why would he keep saying that? Why do we keep repeating his words? Do we not all recognize that there's something peculiar going on with the weather? Is there not something strange going on around the world? This past January 10th, Kendra Pierre-Louis said, scientists say the world's oceans are warming far more quickly than previously thought. She said it's a finding with dire implications for climate change because almost all the excess heat absorbed by the planet ends up stored in the water. There was a new analysis published this past Thursday in the journal Science. It found that oceans are heating up 40% faster on average than a United Nations panel estimated 5 years ago. The researchers also concluded that ocean temperatures have broken records for several straight years. 2018 was thought to at one time to be the warmest year on record for the Earth's oceans, according to Zeke Hausfather, who is an energy systems analyst at the Independent Climate Research Group, Berkeley Earth, and an author of the study. He also stated that 2017 was the warmest year, and then 2016 was the warmest year. Each succeeding year was warmer than the year before. As the planet has warmed, the oceans have provided a critical buffer. They have slowed the effects of climate change by absorbing 93% of the additional heat trapped by the greenhouse gases human beings pump into the atmosphere. To quote Malin Pinsky, an associate professor in the Department of Ecology, Evolution, and Natural Resources at Rutgers University, Malin says, if the ocean wasn't absorbing as much heat, the surface of the land would heat up much faster than it is right now. In fact, the ocean is saving us from massive warming right now. But the surging water temperatures are already killing off marine ecosystems, raising sea levels, and making hurricanes more destructive. As the oceans continue to heat up, those effects will become more catastrophic. More powerful storms, like Hurricane Harvey back in 2017 and Hurricane Florence in 2018, will become more common. and coastlines around the world will flood more frequently. Coral reefs, whose fish populations are sources of food for hundreds of millions of people, will come under increasing stress. A fifth of all corals have already died in the past 3 years. People in the tropics, who rely heavily on fish for protein, could be hard hit. The actual ability of the ocean, or the ability of warm oceans to produce food, is much, much lower. So that means they're going to be more quickly approaching food insecurity, because they play such a critical role in global warming. Oceans are one of the most important areas of research for climate scientists. But oh, wait a minute. The climate scientists right now are out of a job because of a governmental shutdown. So they can't monitor what's happening so that we know what to do. Isn't that strange? Average ocean temperatures are almost a consistent way to track the effects of greenhouse gas emissions, because they are not influenced much by short-term weather patterns. But, oh, wait a minute. I remember back during the, as I reflect now, on the campaign trail, climatological issues such as global warming and these things were called fake news. Interesting, isn't it? Oceans are really the best thermometer we have for changes in the earth. But historically, understanding ocean temperatures has been difficult. An authoritative United Nations report issued in 2014 by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change presented 5 different estimates of ocean heat, but they all showed less warming than the levels projected by the computer climate model, suggesting that either the ocean's heat measurements or the climate models were inaccurate. Since the early 2000s, scientists have measured ocean heat using a network of drifting floats called Argo, named after Jason's ship in Greek mythology. The floats measure the temperature and the saltiness of the upper 6,500 feet of the ocean and upload the data via satellites. But before Argo, researchers relied on temperature sensors that ships lowered into the ocean with copper wire. The wire transferred data from the sensor to the ship for recording until the wire broke and the sensor drifted away. That method was subject to uncertainties, particularly around the accuracy of the depth at which the measurement was taken. Those uncertainties hamper today's scientists as they stitch together 20th century temperature data into a global historical record. In the new analysis, Mr. Hausfather and his colleagues assessed 3 recent studies that better accounted for the older instrumental biases. The results converged at an estimate of an ocean warming that was higher than the 2014 United Nations report and more in line with the climate models, the computer-generated climate models of today. The waters closest to the surface have heated up the most, and that warming has accelerated over the past two decades. According to the data from the lead author of the new study, Li Jing Shang of the Institute of Atmospheric Physics in Beijing. He says unequivocally that the oceans are heating up at an accelerated rate. So I'm putting out a warning to you, my friends, one and all. As the oceans heat up, sea levels rise because warmer waters take up more space than colder water. In fact, most of the sea levels rise observed to date is because of this warming effect, not melting ice caps. Absent global actions to reduce carbon emissions, the warming alone will cause sea levels to rise by about a foot by the year 2100. And the ice caps would contribute even more. That could exacerbate damages from severe coastal flooding and storm surge. The effects of the warming on marine life could also have broader repercussions. As the oceans heats up, it's driving fish into new places. And we're already seeing that that's driving conflict between countries. It's spilling over far beyond just fish. It's turned into trade wars. It's turned into diplomatic disputes. It's led to breakdown in international relations in some cases. Why did Japan become part of World War II? Why did they attack Pearl Harbor? Because the policy of the U.S. government at that time cut off their ability to go after fish. They were being starved. So they went to war over fish, food, in the Atlantic. And now it's happening again. The study initially contained an error that caused its authors to revise their estimates downward. But as it turned out, the downward revision brought the study's estimates much closer to the new consensus. Mr. Hausfather says the corrections made it agree a lot better with other new observational records. Previously, it showed significantly more warming than anyone, and that was potentially worrisome because it meant our observational estimates might be problematic. Now their best estimate is pretty much dead on with the other three recent studies. Scientists who published the four studies were not trying to make their results align with anybody else's results. The groups were working on ocean heat observations. They're not climate modelers. They only measure the temperature of the ocean, and the ocean is heating up. Therefore, the ocean is expanding, and its expansion is a clear sign of social revolution. It's going to happen again. This is Not So Mad Science, and I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. And I can hear by the train approach. By the train approach, we have to take a small break, pay the bills, so to speak. So here we go with a little George Benson and Masquerade. Here on the Black Hole Radio Network, and this is Not So Mad Science. We're going to change gears right quick. As we spoke about in the last 3 weeks, something very strange is happening to the Earth's magnetic North Pole, and no one knows exactly why. According to today's science, we know that every 26,000 years there is a polar shift. The Earth flips over on its axis. But this shift in the magnetic field will now make what we believe to be north, south, and what we believe south to be now become the north. Does this have an effect on climatology? Yes. Will it have an effect on the sociology of people? Absolutely. How do we know that part is true? Well, it throws people into a bit of a tizzy flying from the northern hemisphere to the southern hemisphere, only to find that when they flush the toilet, the water flows in the opposite direction. When they look up into the sky, the stars and everything seem to be backwards. Well, they're upside down. So if that simple change in geology throws people into a tizzy, what then happens when the cosmology of the planet does a somersault? We fail to think the planet Earth is alive. Deep beneath the skin that we walk on, its lifeblood runs rivers of molten iron that pulse around its core. And this mobile iron It what generates the magnetic field that causes the auroras that we see in the northern skies and keeps us alive. But according to the science journal Nature, something very strange is going on deep down below. It was only a couple months ago that we felt a universal, or I should say a global quake, a clanging of the bell, so to speak, to one of my more loving friends, dear to my heart. It scares her every time I mention it, that bong! That was felt around the globe, a global earthquake, so to speak, that no one could pinpoint an epicenter for. It was just there, and then it wasn't. What's going on under this? Well, whatever's happening down there is causing the magnetic north pole to skitter away from Canada, and now it's moving towards Siberia. The magnetic pole is moving so quickly that it has forced the world's geomagnetism experts into a rare move. On January 30th, which is now delayed due to the U.S. government shutdown, the World Magnetic Model, which governs modern navigation systems, is due to undergo an extremely urgent update. This model is vital, an extremely vital component of systems ranging from geopositioning systems used to navigate ships through to smartphone trackers and maps. So everybody that depends on their GPS, these things don't get updated, you're going to get lost because the magnetic north isn't where it should be or where they expected it to be. It's moving. So these global positioning satellites need to be adjusted to account for the shift. The current model was expected to be valid through 2020. But the magnetic pole began to shift so quickly. It was realized back in 2018 that the magnetic model had to be fixed, and it needed to be fixed now. Can you imagine an airplane in the air depending upon its geostationary satellite positioning system, its GPS, so that it can find the airport that it's supposed to land at, but it can't find its way because it doesn't know where it's at? And where it should be over land is over water. Where it should be over an airport is over a mountain. They have finally realized now that it was so inaccurate that it was about to exceed the acceptable safety limits for navigational errors. Every year, geophysicists from the U.S. National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, and the British Geological Survey do a check on how the Earth's magnetic field is varying. This is necessary as the liquid iron churning in the Earth's core does not move in a consistent manner. In 2016, for instance, part of the magnetic field temporarily accelerated deep under northern South America and the eastern Pacific Ocean. This shift was captured by satellites. But the movement of the northern magnetic pole has been the object of study since 1831. Initially, it was tracked moving into the Arctic Ocean at a rate of about 15 kilometers each year. But since the mid-1990s, it has picked up speed. It's now shifting at a rate of about 55 kilometers a year. But another recent study has revealed the Earth's magnetic field has been acting up for some 1,000 years. Why the magnetic field is shifting around so much is unknown. Geomagnetic pulses like the one that happened in 2016 might be traced back to hydromagnetic waves arising from deep in the core. And the fast motion of the northern magnetic pole could be linked to a high-speed jet of liquid iron beneath Canada. This fast-flowing molten river appears to be weakening the magnetic influence of the iron core beneath North America. The location of the North Magnetic Pole appears to be governed by two large-scale patches of magnetic field, one beneath Canada and one beneath Siberia. The Siberian patch is winning the competition. And as global warming opens up more shipping lanes to the north of Russia and Canada, this presents a potentially deadly problem. The fact that the pole is going fast makes these regions more prone to large errors. And it's these errors that places an already tenuous world at greater risk. I'm reminded of the words of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and reminded to us once again from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. We live in the time, and what must be done if we are to survive. This is Not So Mad Science, and I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. We're going to jump to our next piece of gloom and doom. I don't know if any of you have an interest in radio signals from deep space that are detected, so I'm not going to put that on your minds and hearts this evening. And I don't know if you have an interest in whether or not what the loudest sound in the universe could be. So I'm not going to put that on your heart. That's something that's of interest to me. I don't even know if you're interested in knowing about a Big Bang query. question of the Big Bang. I've gone over it so much. Most of us that listen to this program on a regular basis should have some idea and comprehension with respect to the Big Bang. It's not a subject that I would say we've exhausted all possible data and information. No, we haven't done that. But we got to leave some space in between sometimes to look at other things and not those things that we're more comfortable hearing. So, what I'm going to do, I'm going to look at some of the local news. And I'm going to look at it in terms of its the environmental, meaning not so much the environment, but the things that are close around you and how these things have an impact. Just recently, China landed a facility on the moon. Inside this scientific station that they landed on the dark side of the moon, they are now sprouting plants in there. Some of these plants have now taken root, not in lunar soil, but they're blooming or they're growing and sprouting in space. Are we looking now to colonize areas on the moon and produce food there? And if we can grow food there, then we can then establish a permanent base of operation on the moon. But is that of interest to anyone right now? Because that's a future thing to take place. What I do believe is of an immediate interest to the average Joe, anybody walking the street, are the studies of Antarctica and the collapse of ice in Antarctica. And what that means to their daily lives, where you live in any city, USA, any city, China, any city, Europe, any city on the planet. What does the collapse of ice in Antarctica and its impact on their daily lives? Well, I'm going to say this. There was a stunning new study on Antarctic sea ice collapse that greatly raises the risk of a 10-foot sea level rise in this century. And if President Donald Trump's climate policies aren't quickly reversed, this rise in sea level puts the American people and other people around the world in grave and immediate danger. Warming ocean waters drove a six-fold increase in the annual ice mass loss from the Antarctic ice sheets between 1979 and 2017, according to a new study in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. It's been known for a while that the West Antarctic ice sheet was unable and unstable and collapsing at an accelerated rate due to global warming. But the new study finds that parts of the vastly larger East Antarctic ice sheet are also disintegrating. While the West Antarctic ice sheet contains enough ice to raise sea level some 20 feet, the Eastern Antarctic ice sheet contains enough ice to ultimately raise sea levels by 170 feet. What does that mean? Take a city like New York. Lower Manhattan would be underwater. Uptown would be safe because uptown is high ground. Low-level cities along the waterfronts on the eastern seaboard, cities like Boston, would find themselves underwater. Los Angeles, California, would be underwater in certain sections as the water would proceed inland and establish a brand new coastline. We already had the flooding which took place in New Orleans some years back because the levees broke. What happens when the levees are breached, not because they're disintegrating, but because the water level in the Gulf has now been raised 170 feet, which would exceed the height of the levees by some 85 to 95 feet. Cities like New Orleans are now gone. The Florida seaboard, gone. Miami, gone. Are we failing to keep watch on what we're supposed to keep watch of because of the failing policies of one person? These new studies are predicting the seas will rise this century. I promised my dear friend that we would see these things in our lifetime. We won't be old and feeble. We'll still be young enough to run away a little bit. But do you have to run if you know something's coming in advance? Or does Mr. Charlie need to tell you before you believe? Will you heed the words of your brother? Watch the weather. East Antarctica's melting increases the risk of multiple meters, meaning more than 10 feet sea level rises over the next century or so. And even just half the level of sea rise means the destruction of every major coastal city in the nation and the world, with just 6 feet of sea level rise, for instance. The southern tip of Florida would be underwater. From the Everglades, underwater. Key Largo, underwater. All the way up to as far as Hialeah, Hollywood, Florida, would be underwater. This four-decade speed up in ice loss is being driven by global warming, fake news, as the study takes note of, and I quote, during the entire period, the mass loss concentrated in areas closest to warm, salty, subsurface, circumpolar, deep water. So the greatest sea ice loss is precisely where the deep water surrounding Antarctica is warming up the most. The amount of sea ice loss and the rate of speed up is staggering. Between 1979 and 1990, Antarctica shed an average of 40 gigatons of ice mass annually. just so you can get an understanding of what 40 gigatons of ice looks like, a gigaton is 1 billion tons. So 40 billion tons of ice lost a year. The news release explains this, but from 2009 to 2017, roughly 252 billion tons, or 252 gigatons of ice were lost a year. That is a six-fold increase over the previous decade. The study warns that sea level rise will continue to speed up as the ocean continues to warm. And as Think Progress reported last week, a different study concluded ocean warming is accelerating. Now, here's an interesting thing. The White House admits President Trump's climate policies will destroy all U.S. coastal property. Isn't that something? The latest findings suggest that more and more of the eastern Antarctica ice sheet could get exposed to warming ocean water and could contribute to multi-meter loss of ice with unabated climate warming. Tragically, unabated climate warming is the primary policy of the Trump administration. The Trump team has worked tirelessly to gut domestic U.S. climate regulations while becoming the only major country to start the process of withdrawing from the 2015 Paris Climate Accord. So, as the study findings warn, the time to save our coastal cities is running out rapidly. Hence, I'm reminded of the words of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad some 45 years ago. He said, "I wouldn't give you a nickel for coastal property." Nowhere. What did that man know 45 years ago that we are being confronted with today? I think it was on Popeye that Wimpy said, "I'll gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today." Why? Because when Tuesday come around, I won't need to pay you back. You'll be flooded out. So we pull out of the Paris Climate Accord because we say that global warming is fake news. Isn't that something? But averting that unimaginable catastrophe will require going far beyond reversing Mr. Trump's policies. The world will also have to take global carbon dioxide emissions to near zero by early in the second half of the century. Houston, we have a problem. This is Not So Mad Science, with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. This afternoon has been a rough afternoon for me. My blood pressure was raised, and I just had to express myself. So I cobbled together a program in haste. And I pray that I have not lost you as a listener, but I have pricked and tickled your ear that you would go out and do some research for yourself. Don't take my word for it. Go ask Mr. Charlie. He'll tell you I'm telling you the truth. Houston, We have a problem. So as we come to the 4 minute mark of airtime left, I want to share these final words with you. These are the words of Mr. Well, I was going to say Daniel Beatty, but no, we're not going to do that. I think Stevie Wonder says it all like this.
Think of snow within a storm, a new way waiting to be born in a world with need for change. A touch of love and fear of hate, a rushing wind that's asked to wait for the promises of rain. A pearl of wisdom and trash by poverty. She gives love with purity, filling minds with hopeful schemes to build worlds. In sparkling morning dew, she expresses life anew from the earth beneath her feet. She is a flower that grows, lovability, femininity. Father, he speaks of what we are, and a freedom makes us free. Now is in eternity, infinite to all that see, and her dreams have been achieved. Sound of laughter, nature sings out her name for the world to know her fame.
Welcome back. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. We have come to the end of our road for tonight's program. I trust you all have learned something, as I have learned something tonight as well. And if Allah willing, I will be with you again once again next week. But before I go away, I would be remiss and totally failing in my duty if I did not remind you that coming very, very soon, February 17th, 2019, it is Savior's Day. Savior's Day is upon us once again, the crowning achievement of what is called Black History Month. So if you have not shared a gift to help the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan in the work for that growth and the development of our people and our ability to survive in an insane environment, please, I implore you, if I have not sent you a link where you can make a donation to help him in this work, as I choose to help him in this work, I encourage you, one and all, do make a donation. Do make a donation of whatever it is you can spare of your finances for the growth and development of yourself and Black people. It is Savior's Day. We'll be at the United Center, where we all can come together in unity, show forth our power, so to speak. So, we're going to end the program with that, and I'm not going to say anything else. I'm going to ask you to keep the faith, but remember, it's Savior's Day, 2019. Come join us in Chicago, February 17th.